Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. My name is Joe Harvey, and I'm joined by Chrissy, who's in a lovely conservatory.
Yeah, work's been done on my house, Joe. So I was in a cafe yesterday working, and I'm here today in the conservatory at home. So we're moving around this week, mate.
Was it a cafe or was it a cafe stroke bar?
Cafe, mate.
Oh, proper cafe. Fair enough. So obviously, it's been a little while since myself and you have done a TRU podcast. I think we were under the impression when the Prem was coming back, we'd be able to do a podcast every week. We'd maybe even do two a week. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah, after every midweek game, we'll do a quick podcast. But time has not been our side, Joe. We've had a lot to do between me and yourself in terms of the Premiership coming back, jumping on Zoom calls and speaking to, pretty sure we've got some sort of interview from all 12 clubs. Between the both of us on there since it's restarted. But yeah, it's been strangely, August has been a busy time for us and September continues to be, Joe, but we wouldn't have it any other way.
I think the thing is, like, in August, like, if COVID wasn't a thing, in August we would have had like 1 week because it was the Olympics. It would have been the Olympics.
Yeah.
We would have had like 3 days where it would have been like, oh, right, let's try and get as much as possible, get interviews before and afterwards. And then, like, the way it just turned out, it's like we ended up with like, what, 9 games in 7 weeks.
Yeah, it's been manic. I remember being all. We the last one we did was obviously before the Prem started, and we were buzzing. We got the content stored. We were all looking forward to Friday night of Quins versus Sale. And then since then, it's just. I mean, we're recording this on 16th of September, and the last month has been manic in terms of how much rugby has been played. And I think the fact we were missing it so much from the middle of March or whatever it was to now. It's just come up at us so quickly. And Hugo Amon, you spoke to us last week or a couple of weeks ago, and he said, it's just come round so quickly and we're enjoying every second of it. And I think, yes, it's hard work for these pundits and journalists and especially you, Joe, traveling to different parts of the country to watch games. But yeah, we're absolutely enjoying it and it's coming to quite an exciting conclusion to the season.
Yeah, no, I'm loving it. And being able to go to games, which I'm sure was something we'll talk about every now and then throughout this. And we'll talk about the experience from the press side of it, I suppose, because obviously we're kind of in a lucky position to be the people that can go. So we'll talk about that, but we're also going to talk about what's happened in the Premiership, because actually there has actually been some, I was about to say seismic, but it's not that massive because it was already obviously achievable. But we've seen a lot of changes in that top four in particular.
It kind of is seismic, isn't it, Joe? Like, seismic could have been a small portion of that. Actually makes any sense because we knew it was going to be tight at the top four. We knew kind of Exeter were probably there or thereabouts before a ball was kicked in the middle of August. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the way it's sort of developed over the last 4 weeks has been crazy. I mean, you know, Northampton were in the top four, weren't they, before the season started? But they've completely fallen off a cliff. And then Bristol, Wasps and Bath have come not from nowhere because it was kind of bubbling before rugby stopped, but they've continued just from where they picked up from where they left off, should I say. And obviously you've been down to Wasps a number of times, Joe, to the Rico. Mm-hmm. You've spoken to Lee Blackett, a number of the players as well since it's restarted, and they just seem to have a formula which is working so well. And I know Charlie Morgan in the Telegraph did a really good piece on Monday, I think it was, after their victory against Bristol. Mm-hmm. And just talking about how well they've done. But I guess you've had the sense of that atmosphere and how they've been able to continue from where they left off before the lockdown.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, before lockdown, obviously Lee came in. He came in as temporary cover, basically until the end of the season. That was kind of his original role, and then it came clear those couple of games he had before, where they smashed Saris for one, and then they also performed really well in every other game. I think it was only two games actually, so I think I might be overstating it there a bit. But you know, Lee came in and there was an instant upturn. And obviously, a lot of people would have been looking like, well, why get rid of Dai? Because Dai's been there for so long. But then actually, what was very clear was after a while that he maybe had lost that change room a little bit.
Mm.
From the outside looking in, obviously, I could be completely off it. But I mean, the upturn of results does suggest one thing to me is someone from the outside looking in. And when Lee got given the role, I think it gave them tremendous clarity about what the team was going to be like for the future. And it kind of gave you, like us, an idea as well. Because Lee, you know, he's someone who's been up and down that ladder. He's played for Fylde, he's played for Rotherham, he's coached at Rotherham, and, you know, this, that and the other. He's a very straight-talking person, and that's what he's been like throughout. I mean, I remember the first press conference, it was that day we recorded that podcast. And I was sat out in the garden at the office,
Yes,
because it was a nice day, and we hadn't had one for a long time. And he said straight down the line, we're not really looking at everyone else, we're looking at ourselves and how we can be the best rugby team possible. And I think that's probably the best way to have taken it. I mean, we look at Wasps now, they're 61 points, they're second in the table. They'd beaten Bristol at the weekend, which has put Bristol's top four in doubt after Sale's win as well. So, you know, they've had a pretty perfect run of results. They only had that one loss, that game at the Rico against Sale, where Sale had galvanised. They put out a bit of a second team, but actually I think the halfback pairing of Will Cliff and AJ McGinty was pretty perfect that night. And AJ is light years ahead, obviously, in my opinion, of anyone else in that position for Sale. But yeah, Wasps have done tremendously. For me, I think they're very deserving of a top two finish. And I think, I mean, obviously, home advantage doesn't really mean much as this year. It's probably fair to say.
Yeah.
But I think they're massively deserving. And I think you can see that in the players with the way they perform. Obviously, I don't know what it's like for you. You probably have a better view than me because I can't actually wear my glasses with a mask.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with the Lee Blackett stuff. I mean, obviously, he was there anyway at the club with Dyer. That's right in saying. And in a kind of strange sort of way, I think his impact has a few parallels with Stuart Hooper at Bath. Both were kind of part of the club and they've come in and maybe just freshened things up, because in coaches' terms, in directors' rugby terms, they are still quite young. And I do feel like it's harsh to say, because we've met Dai Young, really great, great bloke. Led Wasps to success, and I don't think anyone would have a bad word to say about Dai, but they've just, what Lee's done and what Stuart's done kind of at Bath as well, is just re-energised the place, I feel, and it's not as stagnated. That might be a bit too harsh, but they've sort of said, right, we've tried this, it isn't working, let's just maybe not take a risk, but let's change it, refresh it a little bit, and we're seeing the benefits. These guys don't know the clubs, they know what needs to take to bring success back to the clubs, and in the short period we have seen them, definitely since the restart, they've got the balance absolutely right. They know they've clearly been working on things, Joe, because I know Lee said to you, he said after their first game back, I can't remember who they were playing, it was so many games have been played, but he said we've been working on our offence in the red zone, and it was quite evident in that first game that they played that they had been working on it, because they were brilliant, and they have been brilliant in that department and across all other aspects of the pitch since. And Stuart Hooper, in terms of Bath, came in at the start of the season and kind of said, well, let's use Pack as a platform to attack. And you've got Ben O'Barn already there, Tom Dunn there, but, you know, to bring in, you know, Will Stewart, I think, came in last summer. Judge came in last summer as well. And it's just been a massive weapon for them. And I think what Lee and Stuart have done, they've got the philosophies of how they want to play and said, this is the blueprint, let's work on it in each training session possible. And it's absolutely reaping the rewards. And I think that fresh energy that both of them have brought is just reward at the moment for where they sit in the table.
Yeah. And obviously Bath as well, Neil Hatley becoming head coach, which is probably really helpful for Stuart Hooper. Obviously he played under Hatley when he was captain at the club a few years ago now. When they got to that final before the 2015 World Cup. And I think, obviously I was fortunate enough to see Bath beat Leicester at Welford Road. That, what was it? It was like 38-16 or something like that. Ridiculous. Roger McConaughey is obviously having a bloody lovely time at the minute. Probably, what are we saying?
Outrageous performances.
Oh, I mean, what? Outside shout for player of the year, maybe?
You know what? I think people would probably be a little bit like, well, surely Exeter have got to win player of the year, but it doesn't, if you win the league, it doesn't necessarily mean you've got the best player. And I do think across the board, Exeter as a team is so efficient and they are the top team. And I use a team, and the word team is the main, but as you quite rightly say, Joe, Bath, they're a great team, but they've got some incredible individuals who are just like, McConaughey's up there 100%. I mean, the guy's just come back from, he even said, I think it was the first or second game back in a press conference, said, yeah, man, I wasn't particularly happy with my form after Japan. I came back and didn't really kind of pick up from where I wanted to. But then since the restart, he's been on absolute fire. And that try against Leicester was brilliant. And his ability to finish in ridiculous positions, obviously, he's from his sevens days. But yeah, mate, I'd have to say he's got to be up there as top three, top five players so far, definitely since the restart. But arguably, if Bath do get into the playoffs, it looks like they will, could easily be player of the season.
Yeah, I mean, as things stand at the minute, as we have a small break, but Bath play Gloucester next Tuesday.
Yeah.
As things stand, Bath are in third position on 60 points, Sale and Bristol below them on 59, which means it's really between Sale and Bristol for that top four slot. Sale, their restart was far from perfect. They played that game against Harlequins. I think it was a Friday night game. And they looked, I mean, if you looked at that kind of, if we'll call it a mini off-season, well, it wasn't mini, it was 6 months, but, you know, that kind of off-season that they had, there was actually more hype about them at the start of, at the resumption of the league than there was before, because obviously the signing of Manny Tuilagi, that's a pretty big thing. You know, I believe they recently moved training grounds and stuff like that as well. So they've had an increase in facilities, and it's just like everything's looking up, and they had this opportunity to finish. They fell out of the top four briefly, as I remember. What have you made of them, Chris? They're your local team, you know, a few of the boys.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right, Joe. The way the hype before the start of the restart, we did the podcast and we were talking about, you know, Manny who's come to the club, as you quite rightly say, new training ground, the planning on getting a new stadium, and it's really exciting. And I mean, you speak to any of the Sale boys, they're really excited of what's to come. And those first two games, Steve Diamond came out and said, look, we have to improve, otherwise top four is, we're out the top four, it's out of our hands. And yeah, against Quins, they were completely nullified. Manu hardly got the ball, and I think that it was quite predictable in the way they played, and Marcus Smith controlled the game brilliantly that night. Against Exeter, they got Manu involved a lot more in that first half, but their discipline just let them down in the second half, and Exeter came roaring back in the way Exeter know how to. And he went strong both games, Steve Diamond, and with the directives brought in by Premiership Rugby and the Professional Game Board to say you need to rotate your squad, the players can't be playing X amount of matches in a certain amount of time. We all knew, you knew going to the Rico that night, Joe, that Sale were going to put out a weakened team. And I remember watching it in a bar with my mate. We had the laptop on watching it and we were like, Sale are going to get beat this evening. And we planned to go out and have a few beers because it was one of those midweek games. And we're like, let's do it. And we're like, Sale are going to get beat tonight. But it's weird, isn't it? You know, they throw all the stars, all the star names on in those first two games. And as Dime said last week, it was his dirty dozen who got the job done. And McGinty, you said it before, Joe, Cliff is, for me, one of the most underrated players in the league. AJ McGinty was probably, you've got to feel hard, that he must have felt a little bit aggrieved, you know, behind Rob Dupree. And, you know, Rob's a fantastic player, but I've always rated AJ. And he's just taken his opportunity with absolute both hands since that day at the Rico. He's been exceptional. He was brilliant against Bath on Sunday as well, even though Sale lost. But he was fantastic. And you've seen him, you saw him firsthand against Wasps, Joe. And I think he has been someone that I think Dimes has realised, like, no, he has to play. And it's the same with Luke James as well. Both two lads were maybe in and out of the squad, but now they have to be, you know. I think Luke's nailed down the 15 shirt and AJ's pretty much got both of his hands on the 10 shirt.
Yeah, and I think AJ, you know, he's someone, firstly, he was a latecomer to professional rugby, was never involved with Leinster when he was at Blackrock College or anything like that. And obviously, I did the interview with him. I want to say it was in April. Feels a lot longer ago than it probably was. And I was talking about him going to Life U in America, which is a college in Georgia, because it was just ahead of the first ever Major League Rugby draft. So that's why I decided to do that. And, you know, he is this kind of person who, because he plays for the USA, is always labelled as he plays for the USA. So you're always going to choose the South African on paper.
Mm.
But in reality, actually, what AJ does is so brilliant. His kicking is pretty perfect from the tee and from hand. And his decision-making in defence as well is pretty strong, I'd say. I mean, he was defence coach at Sedgwick Park Tigers, wasn't he, for a bit?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think AJ's the kind of person who actually can bring that club forward. It just depends if the club want to carry on with him there. Which brings us, I mean, we've just talked about one team that brought in a Superstar 13. Let's talk about another. Bristol Bears, they brought in Semi Rodrada. He's the Superstar 13, for anyone wondering. It's not. I was about to say Piers O'Connor, but he's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
He played very well at the weekend, actually. Bristol, they now sit fifth. you know, the reason, I'm not actually sure on the reason, because they've actually got a draw. It must be points difference somewhere along the lines. What have you thought about Bristol? Because Pat Lamb's come in with the strong, same strong messaging as ever. You did a podcast with him during lockdown. Mm. What's your assessment of Bristol so far?
Yeah, I mean, what if you kind of relate it to what Sale done? Sale, you know, you could have said, "Oh, Diamonds has got a selection run for the first two games," but actually, it was a blessing in disguise with him playing his second string team, getting that result against Wasps, went on a brilliant run, and then had that opportunity again to play their strong team against Bath, and unfortunately the result didn't go their way on the weekend from a Sale point of view. But with Bristol, if you just looking at the fixtures now, you know, they had Saracens on that first weekend, which they definitely went, you know, fully loaded, if that's the right kind of phrase, with, you know, your Semi Radradas playing, your Kyle Sinclair's playing, and your Ben Earls and people like that. And those guys, I think, played the first three games, those key men, which we've seen from Bristol when they played Gloucester and Exeter. So when they went up to Sale at the end of August, it was a very similar team to what you saw, Joe, against Wasps on the weekend. And where the difference with what Bristol and Sale have done is Sale have used their weakened side, if you like, and they've got the job done. And Bristol's weakened side isn't as good as Sale's, if that makes sense. So the gamble from Pat Lamb is, let's go hit the ground running and try and get points on the board. And then it's when it's, you know, it's hindsight's a wonderful thing. But when it comes to that game against Sale, they've had to play the weakened side, and with both sides playing in the top four race, it could prove detrimental to them. And again, on the weekend, you know, they pick up that win against Worcester on the Friday when the Surialli Pietau Kitchener scrap happened. They then produce a fantastic performance against the Northampton Saints side, who were really short of confidence. And I think if Bristol, you know, Bristol were at home, they wanted to get the 5 points on the board. But then going into a massive game against Wasps, their second team was dismantled by a first-choice Wasps team. So I know Pat said they've got four games in 14 days with that run finishing against Dragons in the European Challenge Cup on Friday. But I just feel like the priorities with the games they've chosen hasn't worked out for them. And I mean, they should win the remaining games, Leicester and then London Irish, and that's no disrespect to your teams. But yeah, to go back to your question, Joe, I think they've played some great rugby. There is absolutely no doubt about that. It's one of the most exciting teams to watch. I said that in the podcast. I thought they were going to get into the top four and potentially win the whole thing. I just think the way they've actually prioritised games hasn't actually worked in their favour. But I think that was always going to be, you know, a big question mark for any director of rugby or coach going into this block of games, of how they prioritise games. And you never know what's going to happen with other results. But it has worked in a way. It hasn't for Bristol, as you say. They're now out of the top four, but they've got two very favourable games on paper in the last two rounds of the Premiership. So it's still all to play for them, but it's now out of their hands.
And that's a depth thing. That's something that's going to have to be addressed probably next year, probably, actually, to be fair. That's not going to be anything that's going to be dealt with quickly. But, I mean, the thing is, Bristol, there's no one chasing Bristol at the minute. I mean, there's 13... I can actually do maths. There's 13 points difference between them and their closest rivals, which is Harlequins. And Harlequins have had a surge to get to that point of the table. I mean, if we talk about this kind of group of, what, we'll say 6 to 8, just based on points, something like that. You know, Harlequins, Northampton, Saints, Gloucester. All safe in the knowledge they get Champions Cup rugby next season.
I think Gloucester, it's not done, is it? But it should, it is done because of the mathematical reasons. Worcester can still catch them. But I do think Gloucester are going to pick up at least one more point from their final two games to secure it. But
I mean, let's talk about Gloucester. Danny Cipriani does not seem the player he was before lockdown. Maybe even last year. He's not actually had a good season when you look at it kind of on paper. They brought an entirely new coaching staff, and you would have thought, with Alex King, Don Waldock, and George Skivington, all players who are friends with Danny, you would have maybe thought he would have gone on a bit of a barnstormer.
Yeah, it's straight. I mean, you probably watched the game on Monday as well, Joe, against Quins, and that's probably the worst Cipriani performance I've seen since he's joined Gloucester. It just looked, you know, I think his confidence went as soon as he threw that forward pass. where it was easy to score, not score. It was before, it was that kick that led to Quincy's first try, I think, with Caden Murley scoring straight to Domprant to Murley, and Murley raced over. And from that period, he just looked frustrated with himself. I think it's weird, and this is where ring fencing comes into it and stuff like that for these clubs. Gloucester aren't playing for anything. They haven't been playing for anything since, for a while. And as you say, Skivington's come in, new coaching staff. And with that, they need time. Skivington said after the game on Monday that all we're doing now is building confidence and trying to get momentum for next season. But it's going to take time. But when Cipriani isn't the Cipriani that we know he can be, it's like Austin Healey made a good point actually on Twitter. He said, is he the problem at the moment? Are they focused too much on Cipriani and everything going through him? And is that something they're going to have to maybe switch up? So, they were far from the best. I'd be very irritated by that performance. But as you said, Joe, they've got a nice West Country derby next Tuesday, I think, against Bath. So they'll want to make amends for that. But yeah, that's the first time I've actually properly... you saw Gloucester against Irish, didn't you, Joe? And yes. Irish played really well in that second half, didn't they? And I think Gloucester are just trying to find the way still under Skivington.
In my honest opinion, I thought Irish played well throughout. I think actually there wasn't really too much wrong with that performance. And I'll tell you what, Paddy Jackson might be one of the best fly halves I've ever seen play. He's at Irish for reasons, because he's not in Ireland anymore. He was brilliant. And I think actually, you know, Irish are actually a really good team. I'm sure we'll talk about them a bit more in a minute. But yeah, Gloucester is struggling in some sense to keep a grasp on things for an entire game. I don't know what it is, because it doesn't come like a natural time. It comes like 10 minutes before a break and then continues for some reason 10 minutes after, or it stops for 5 minutes and then it carries on again. So I don't really understand what it is there. I don't know if that's it's probably a defence thing. It's definitely a defence thing, but it's also a performance thing, because somewhere along the lines, they're giving the ball away too easy. But ultimately, it's like Skivington said, it's a time of transition for them. And I don't think, I'm looking at the teams now in front of me, which is why I'm not looking at the camera. No one else has had that transition in coaches. So obviously a lot of teams have had changes, but then, like, I mean, if we talk about the defence coach who's gone from Worcester to Bristol, for example, like that's like the kind of small changes we've seen, where it's been like someone going from one club to the other, or down the road, or someone moving in from like a championship team or a national, you know what I mean? So that's the only real things we've seen. There needs to be something going on there. I think there's going to be some interesting conversations next season.
Yeah, I think just, you know, a normal coach coming in has such a good amount of time to settle everything down, get his ideas across to the players in the normal way he would, get his feel for the team, who's decent, who he's not favouring. Skivington's not really had that massive opportunity. He's not had that proper pre-season with him, and he's not really going to get it either. From whenever the season finishes on the 4th of October for Gloucester, they've got maybe a month and a bit, which is going to be key for him, as you say, Joe.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously Northampton, for some reason, have completely imploded, but they do have this massive injury problem at the minute, which is probably the fair thing to say. When you've only got one fit loose head prof, it's going to be a tough run of it.
You're right, Joe. The injuries, you can't... Injuries play a massive part. They would have always played a part during this period. And Northampton, you do have to sympathise them with a little bit, but they have been incredibly inaccurate with what they've done in terms of on the pitch. I think Chris Boyd's selection policy has backfired massively.
He's had two squads, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's not played... I don't think he's played the same... I think he's only played maybe three or four players back-to-back once. And I think it was like Furbank one week and Rory Hutchison and Protzer the other week. And I just, the way they've done it, and he said the other week, well, time will tell. I think time has told. And I do think that what he's done hasn't worked for him. And as you said, the injuries, you can have a little bit of sympathy with them, but they've, as I said right at the start, they've fallen off a cliff a little bit, and their season now rests on the weekend. And I don't think they would have liked that to be the case when the first ball was kicked in at the start of August.
One of the funniest things for me was him shaving the moustache, if that was the reason they were losing games.
A lot of people picked up on that. A lot of people said, oh yeah, right, that's it. It's the moustache hoodoo, let's get rid of it. Not the case.
I've not been to one of their press conferences yet, but I have this image in my head of him going, this is the reason, and shaving it on the conference. But unfortunately, that's probably not a reality. Places 9 through 11, and Saracens will get their own little section where we'll link it with the Champions Cup. Because they're in a very unique situation, as ever, are Saracens. Worcester, London Irish, Leicester. Leicester got a win at the weekend against Northampton, and Northampton Saints side that's struggling with injury, as we said, have looked devoid of confidence at times.
Leicester. Or yes. Northampton. I think in a kind of similar way to Skivington and Gloucester, they are going through this transition under Steve Borthwick. They have struggled, certainly after the water break. We saw it in the Premier League football that some teams, when it did have this water break, teams seem to lose any momentum they had. Leicester massively have been affected by, they play well for 20 minutes. I know they played pretty well against Bath when you were there, Joe, at Elford Road. I remember the first game back against Exeter at Sandy Park. They started really well, but they've not been able to continue with that. And what they were allowed to, what they did really well was show a lot of character on the Sunday against Northampton. You know, was it two or three yellow cards that they had to deal with?
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah, they are lacking, you know, they've had a really torrid season and they are lacking confidence. But what Steve Borthwick and Jordan Murphy and everyone with Leicester's will be absolutely delighted with is their effort. A lot of young guys have had a lot of game time. And what the guys at Tigers have been able to do is assess their options really well, I think, during this lockdown period. They know that this season was done and dusted for them. There's no point even trying to challenge for Champions Cup rugby. It was kind of, let's see where we're at. And I think, you know, their effort, the desire, and yes, the results haven't gone the way you do question at times, like what's going on at Leicester, but their effort and desire was rewarded in the derby on Sunday, I think.
I figured, as Leicester was the first game I went to as press for TRU after the restart. Shall we talk through the match day experience for journalists?
Yeah, let's do it, mate, before we go on to the old Saracens debate.
Yeah. So basically, you get a couple of emails saying this is the rules, this, that, and the other, and it's pretty much the copy and paste of government guidelines, which is fair enough. And this is the same for every team. You get sent all these documents that you've got to sign. You don't actually have to sign them. You sign them when you get there. You don't have to sign them prior to that.
Right.
Because obviously risk of transference, I imagine, is something to do with that. You basically rock up, and it's actually not as stressful as I thought it was going to be, because obviously you know that players are getting like two or three tests a week. So something in your head saying, I'm going to have a test rock up through my door at some point soon. And all you have to do is you have your temperature taken, which is somewhat threatening, you know, someone pointing something at your head like that. But at Gloucester, they had one where it's like you look at a screen and it tells you your temperature like that. I was like, I don't know how it does it, but it's cool. And then you end up sat up in the gods somewhere. It's weird not having fans, and obviously.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. How's that like? It must be dead weird rocking up to a stadium and no fans at all.
Yeah, it's weird actually, because what I'd say is it's actually more noticeable in the smaller grounds.
Right.
Like at a King's Home or Welford Road, for example, it's really noticeable then, because you hear the noise bouncing a lot clearer, like off the walls and off the surfaces and stuff. You hear it a lot more. And yeah, it's a bit weird. And then like, I'm sure you could hear this during games anyway, but I've just never thought about it, is that you can hear like the cars.
Yeah.
You can hear and see the cars more clearly that are coming by. And like, another thing, this is going to make, I mean, obviously you've been to games with me, but you use the crowd when you're writing as a barometer for when to look up and stuff like that. It's a small thing, but it's like you're in this mindset of, right, I've got to write this thing now. And this is why sometimes when I'm doing like live tweets, I'm writing up a match report at the same time. Sometimes the tweets stop because I'm writing the match report, but then also I've got to try and look up every now and then. So like you wait for crowd noise to tell you something's about to happen or something has happened and you need to look at a screen to see what's happened and this, that and the other. It's just weird. And obviously I text, you might mind me saying this, but I texted Charlie Beckett on Monday night because he was at the game where Gloucester had the fans in. And he said it was weird because obviously you're used to 14,000 King's Home packed out, you know, full to the rafters. And he said it's weird because 1,000, but it was really good. Like, because it was just good to have people back. Yeah, and I think, you know, I would love to go to that game, but I didn't fancy the, I think it was gonna, it would have taken me 8 hours to get home or something stupid like that. So wasn't keen. And yeah, no, I think it's, the sooner we get fans back in, the better, but it's got to be done in a safe manner. And we've seen that, you know, because, I mean, we're, I mean, what, I live 20 odd miles away from Birmingham. And that's just gone into local lockdown and stuff. And it's like, you know, it's got to be done in a safe way. And unfortunately, you only notice it when it's closer to home, when these things happen. Obviously, you know, living near Manchester, our good friend Max Skoffick, he's back in a lockdown, isn't he? So, yeah, it's a funny one. But it's good to be able to go to games. And I think we're in a privileged position where we can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was gonna say that, the way, I mean, you thought, how would they handle journalists? How many would they let in? I know, you know, TRU isn't your Telegraphs in terms of the reach they get, the BBC Sports and those kind of journalists. So, you know, you wonder, but the clubs have just said, yeah, come in. And I guess that was probably every single club wanted that to happen. They want people back in their stadiums. They want journalists covering the games because we missed it so much. And as you say, Joe, yeah, you're in a privileged position. When you can sit and watch 80 minutes of rugby, and you know, you do have, you know, Quinn's fans missing out a couple of weeks ago. I know 2,700 there, but you've got a load of Gloucester fans missing out who would have loved to have been there under the lights on Monday night against Quinn's. So, you know, you were in a privileged position to be able to cover the games at the moment. But yeah, rugby's been lucky that so far we've had two occasions where they have been part of this government's pilot scheme. You know, we are obviously seeing a few more regulations put in place now, which is a bit of a shame across the country. But hopefully positive steps can be made forward, because clubs, as Lance Bradley said, of Gloucester, that they need this money, they need the fans, they can't afford to go months and months without supporters again. So hopefully we'll get more fans and rugby union can still make steps forward this season, going into next season.
Well, obviously Autumn Nations Cup coming up. England, there's an England Barbarians game. They're hoping to have 20,000 fans in. I'm hoping to hopefully be there as well as a reporter, because it'll be great to be back at Twickenham. It'll be 9 months on from when I was last there, when there was 80,000 people in. So just to be back there and have some sort of semblance of normality would be nice. But yes, we've got that to look forward to. And I think clubs, and also just as a side point, what you were saying a second, I think clubs are enjoying the increased coverage. I think there's actually more coverage of teams than there was before, because and it's a problem me and you have had all year, last 2 years really, where we've been talking about, do we want to go to press conferences? But the problem is, you've got to get to some training ground, and this is all due respect to everyone, some training ground in the middle of nowhere that, you know, I don't drive, you do, but as with anything, sometimes it's a bit of a balancing act with other things we've got going on in our lives. And it's like, now we can actually, and I'm sorry for using the phrase, now we can just sit on our arses in our own like homes, or if we want to go to the office, we can, but obviously just sometimes it's better not to. It's made it easier. And I think the Premiership wins, the clubs win. And I think the kind of publications win as well, because everyone's got this availability of content to them now that we wouldn't necessarily have had. Yeah. Like me doing the Worcester stuff, where they're externally recording like a Zoom call. That's an extra bit of content that we weren't anticipating getting, or we wouldn't have got if we'd gone ourselves.
I think it's kind of maybe a look into the future slightly, Joe. And I mean, the relationships we've been able to build with clubs that, yes, we've spoken to in the past, but we've not been able to get there for one reason or another. So your Bristols, your Bath, your Exeters, and yes, they're a long way for us to travel, and it would take a lot of our day to get there. But we've been able to, you know, make good contacts with Mark at the club and Tom at Bath and Tom at Bristol as well, and strengthen the other links we've been able to get to, Joe. So I think it's a look into the future. I mean, of course, we look, you know, you want to go there, gauge the reaction of whoever you're speaking to, speak to your fellow, you know, journalists and colleagues about stuff. And it'd be great to see. Can't wait to see some of those guys that we'd be able to build relationships up with as well during this time. So, but there is the element of, yeah, you're right, Joe, we can sit here and say we've got X tomorrow at 2:30, and it's right, okay, we just make sure we're on the Zoom call, and you get your content written up straight away. You don't have to travel back on the train or anything like that. So yeah, I think the way Premiership would have done it and the way the clubs have done it so far has been really, really positive.
Yeah, no, it's been definitely an insight, and I'm looking forward to seeing what England and and the rest of the Autumn Nation, because the Autumn Nation, I mean, that's a different podcast. We'll wait a few weeks for that. But the Autumn Nations, because obviously Georgia are going to be involved. I remember the coaches are English speaking. I could be wrong. I'm pretty certain they are.
I think, yes, they are. But I think, obviously, Roundtree's no longer there. He's with Munster. And I think a few of them have sort of left from that World Cup squad. But yeah, there's some definitely Georgia-speaking players, English-speaking Georgian players in the squad. Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be exciting, isn't it? I mean, as I said right at the start, we've missed rugby so much. We've had wall-to-wall rugby over the last month and a little bit, and we're going to have wall-to-wall rugby pretty much between now and probably next August. But then you've got the Lions as well, so it's a packed schedule. And the Olympics, packed schedule, really. But yeah, Autumn Nations is definitely something to look forward to, a bit of international rugby.
I just realised, Vern Cotter for Fiji.
Yeah.
That's going to be crackers. But yeah, these are all the things we've got to look forward to. But obviously, we're now going to move on to Saracens. I suppose I should just give a word to London Irish. London Irish clearly making improvements every week. Every week I've seen them. Balancing act. They know they're going to be in London next year. So I think they're actually kind of looking towards that. And I think that's a completely understandable thing. Moving into Brentford Stadium is going to be big for them. Worcester, trialling out the youngsters, really going for that kind of homegrown approach that we love to see. A lot of boys that have been playing in the National Leagues getting involved, you know, and a few students as well. I think the Lewis Holsey, he was playing for Loughborough this season. I think a premiership start the other week. So,
yeah,
you know, we're seeing a lot of what we love to see. Saracens, you know, they came out at the start of all this. Were very honest in what they said and said that the Leinster game was their priority. They've lost a couple games. I think three games since the restart.
Yeah. Sale, Wasps. Bristol and Wasps. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've lost three games. Not really. I don't think they've ever put out a full strength 15.
They were pretty strong against Wasps the other week.
Oh, and that then was, Farrell.
Yeah, and then Farrell did Farrell. so that was... But what I have noticed is that they're... Saturday teams have been pretty strong, and I guess they were kind of giving them a bit of game time to keep the momentum going, keep the legs pumping. But obviously, since Farrell's red card, since that Wasps game, they've gone weak against Sale, they were weak against Exeter. I'm wrapping up your Vunipolas, your Goods, your Jamie Georges and Cotter Wool for obviously the game on Saturday against Leinster.
Yeah, of course. And obviously Leinster, last weekend, became the Pro 14 champions. They're coming
without
in rising
Johnny
off a
Sexton.
High.
Sexton didn't play, did he? Or he didn't start?
No, I don't think he started, no.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Sorry, Joe, go on.
Yeah, and, you know, Leinster, normally when you win a trophy, you get like a week's grace. I'm not going to say for what reason you get the week's grace, but there's definitely some sort of alcohol involved. they're not going to have had that, and they're going to be riding high off like, kind of the endorphins, the euphoria of that win.
Do you think they would have wanted that, Joe, kind of going out celebrating? Because this, you know, a Leinster fan may literally shoot me down for saying this. But yeah, it's all well and good with them winning the Pro 14. They're used to winning the Pro 14. But surely, if they don't win the European Cup or at least get to the final, is that a bad season for them? Because... The Pro 14 is the bread and butter. They know how to win that. They rested Johnny Sexton for a final. I think they want to be back on top of Europe. They would have hated the fact they lost to Saracens, last year in Newcastle. And I just think they know how massive this game is for them. They've been, Mark McCall said last week that Leinster have been on a 14, 15-month unbeaten run or something like that since that final.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're going to be banged up for it. I honestly think, Joe, that yes, they would have been delighted to win the league again, but they would not have celebrated and got out and had a few beers for the week. They are fully concentrated on winning the European Cup, I think, now. So they'll be absolutely banged up for it.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I think you're right. I think the thing is they're going to have a lot of players that are kind of completely on it. Who are body, like, obviously they're going to be bloody sore after a game against Ulster at the Aviva at the weekend, but they're playing at the Aviva again, so they're literally at the place where they were last week. I think they've played like their last five games there now. If Dan McFarlane the other week on a press conference said that they'd had four games there, so I'm just going with what he says in regards to that. Yeah, and I think the thing is for Saracens, they've not had that confluency that, you know, that Leinster have had the last few weeks. And Leinster have actually had a really... And actually, here's maybe the big question. Leinster have played four games since coming back. Saracens, the squad, collectively played seven or eight or nine or something.
Yeah.
So the real question is, would you rather have had the workload of four games week by week, or would you rather have the massive workload that the Premiership had?
I think the first one, Joe. I think the fact that you have had maybe the full week to prepare a side and really work on those finer details. We've heard so many coaches and director of rugby said we've had no time to work on anything that hasn't gone right for us. Whereas I guess Leinster, well, not much seems to go wrong for Leinster, but if they need to iron out a few creases, they have been able to do that. With Sarries, as you said, Joe, it has been their number one thing since Christmas time, since all the salary cap scandal was brought to light, since they managed to put the place in the quarterfinals. It is just been about this Saturday coming. But if there's one team that could maybe trouble Leinster, it is Saracens. And I even think if you chuck Exeter, if it was between Exeter or Saracens, and you said, right, one of these two have got to play Leinster on Saturday, who are you backing to maybe give Leinster a run for the money? I'd go Saracens. I really would, even without Farrell. Because they've been there, they've done it, they've been in these big occasions. But I don't think they'll win, because Farrell is a big loss to them. But I think if there's one team, it's going to be fascinating, but if there's one team who will, because of everything that's gone on, because of their experiences, who are going to give Leinster a fight, it's going to be Saracens. So whatever occurs on Saturday, I'm sure it's going to be an absolutely cracking game of rugby.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend's games. Because all of them are on telly, I didn't realise. So I'm just going to be able to watch all of them. Clermont Auvergne versus Racing 92. I mean, I don't think myself and Chris are the voices of knowledge on French rugby. I mean, I know a bit about it.
I'm going to guess that Racing have won both of their games since the top 14's returned, and Clermont might have done the same, or I've got off to a reasonable start. That's my guess.
Fair enough. All I know is Kirtley Beale's banned.
Yes. Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
And Finn Russell's a good player.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I did see a highlight. I think one of the Scottish journalists I follow on Twitter quote tweeted a highlights reel from Racing's game against Montpellier. I might be completely wrong with that. And Finn Russell was absolutely outrageous. He was brilliant. Some of the stuff he was doing was fantastic. So, yeah, it could be a bit of a Finn Russell show again. And I mean, the French derby in the quarterfinals is always going to be a tasty affair. And yeah, Racing will have eyes on the European Cup as well, I think.
Yeah, they've been so close yet so far for so many years. On Sunday, we see Stade Toulousain take on Ulster. Not in Toulouse anymore. That game's been moved. Mm-hmm. I imagine there's probably maybe a higher than average little, you know, case of COVID than everywhere else. Ulster, as much as we were talking about Leinster coming off the high, Ulster have got to drag themselves back from the low of losing a final in a close game.
Yeah, they'll be disappointed. Obviously, it was dramatic how they got through to the final in the first place with that late kick. And I don't know. I mean, last year when I was watching the Champions Cup, I really liked the look of Ulster. And I was thinking, you know what? They could be a bit of an outside bet to go really far. I mean, we know how well Toulouse can play. That's going to be quite an interesting one, because I don't know too much about Toulouse. But as you say, Joe, Ulster be reeling. And they got so far to winning. I think it was 14 years since they won the Pro 14, or 13 years. And they got so far and so close to winning something that might kind of inspire them again to maybe crack on in this competition and really give it a go. So that could be a very intriguing one on Sunday lunchtime, I think, guys.
Yeah. I'm actually just kind of remembering the press release saying that Toulouse weren't playing there. I think it's because in France, they're allowing some crowds in. So I think the thing is they've had to move it away so that people won't come to the ground.
Okay.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
The final game in the Challenge, the Champions Cup, we'll get onto the Challenge Cup in a second when I can find the tab. That is Exeter Chiefs versus Northampton Saints at Sandy Park. Form would say, and Northampton's current front row woes, Exeter kind of bit of a whitewash.
You'd like to think so. They've been superb, haven't they? Whichever squad has been put out, minus Sunday's game against Saracens, they've really got the result for Rob Baxter. And as you said, Joe, when we mentioned it before, this injury crisis in the front row for Northampton is madness. We said yesterday on our meeting call about sort of if they lose their that young lad, is it Iogun? I think he's the only fit loose head. Then this could be a massive problem for him because he's going to play 80 minutes. And how often do you see a prop play 80 minutes of rugby? Not very often. So if he gets any knock, it could be down to uncontested scrums. And that would, for me, we saw it I think it was Bristol Northampton the other week, last week. And he just killed the game. And this is a quarter final. And if he, for some reason, being hypothetical there, if they lose this young lad at prop and it goes to uncontested scrums, it kills a quarter final. There's a quarter final, the biggest, club competition for me in rugby. And I just think it kills the game. So it's madness that they can't bring someone in. I think Northampton were having conversations with the European rugby to try and get somebody in and register. I think Newcastle had something similar, didn't they, Joe, last year? I can't remember who it was against, but that they had to try and negotiate and bring in someone. But I think I can't remember who it was, but someone else played it in the front row or in the pack and they shouldn't have been playing there.
I remember that. I can't remember what happened.
Remember who it was. I think as to go back to your original point, I think it's got to be it. I mean, George Fairbanks said last week or the week before that the mood is still upbeat in the Saints camp, but going to Sandy Park without, with so many injuries, as you mentioned, against the Exeter team that are absolutely flying and going to be fully loaded, I think it's going to be a home win for that one.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, I think just one of the important things that we always lose in sport is that it could be tremendous. It could be really detrimental to that young prop if he comes up against someone who's like 34, has been around the game for a long time, and it could be damaging in the sense that, well, his confidence, it could ruin his career. Not ruin his career. That's a bit too dramatic for me. But I think just in terms of player welfare, long term, and if for someone that wants to get a career, obviously I know that it depends. It's individual for everyone how they get up from a situation and walk on from it. But you've got to take the player welfare side into it. I think 20, 30 minutes off the bench might be better.
Yeah, it depends if any of the tight heads can play loose head. And I know in the Wasps game, when they had a lot of injuries in the front row, his name escapes me and I should really know, but I think Wayne Barnes asked one of the lads, could you play?
West.
Was it West? But I think
Tom West, yeah.
Yeah, Tom West. And I think one of the coaches said, yes, he can. And then Wayne Barnes asked the player and he said, no, I've not really played there. And that's the debate. It's such a specialist position, and Max Ashcroft would probably tell us exactly what it means to play either side of the hooker, you can't just slot in there. You have to have had, and especially when it comes to such a big game like a quarter final, you've got to have had that experience in that position. So we'll wait and see. I know Northampton have got their press conference this afternoon, so we'll wait and see what their outcome is there. But yeah, as you say, Joe, throwing a 19-year-old into such a big game where there's that amount of pressure on him, which Northampton can't do anything about, it could be very serious for him. But we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, don't envy anyone at Northampton right now. We'll be wrapping up soon. Bristol Bears versus Dragons in the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup. Obviously, I was on the call with Bristol Bears yesterday.
How was Pat?
How would I regularly describe Pat? Bullish. That seems fair. Yeah, he's keen. And what I didn't realise was about this game until he mentioned it, because obviously I'm from the Northeast. I know you can't tell, I forgot that him and Dean Ryan played together at Falcons.
Yes, yeah.
I completely forgot that. But so that's a meeting of two friends. Now, the Dragons 20-all draw against Ospreys to resume. I can't remember the result after that. I remember the 20-all result for some reason. Oh, because they couldn't finish it off against 14 men. That's what it was. And they've got all these all-stars. They've got Jamie Roberts. They've recently signed Greg Bateman. That's a great signing. They've got, the likes of Leon Brown. They've got so many great players. Aaron Wainwright, Nick Tompkins now. But they're coming up against a Bristol team that's firstly, you know, rotated the squad so that they're going to have a pretty strong squad at the weekend. And I'd probably back Bristol to win, knowing the quality they've got. And that could be a product of me not watching that much Pro 14.
I think you're right, Joe, with what you say there, because Bristol rested so many players, or had to rest so many players on Sunday against Wasps when you were there, that these lads who have been, they've got, I know Pat's talked about the turnaround been only 5 days, but they've had 5 days. These lads, you know, your Callum Tredy's, your Semi Rodradas, your Carl Sinclair's, these guys who have been playing really well in the Premiership when they have been called upon, and now going to be hopefully fit, round to go, pretty much fully charged for that game on Friday. So then after that, obviously, they've got a week off after that now, Bristol, when they do then play Leicester and then London Irish. But it depends, doesn't it? If they get through, they do have that semi-final next weekend, I think it's scheduled for. But I think you're right, Joe. I think despite us not watching the Dragons too much, if Bristol are going to go fully stacked, which we'll find out tomorrow on Thursday, I think it'll be a Bristol win.
Yeah. Saturday, we have Bordeaux Begler versus Edinburgh. Edinburgh obviously losing in the last minutes to Ulster in that semi-final of the Pro 14. And then we've also got RC Toulon against Scarlets. Can't say I'm massively up to date with those teams. I know Scarlets made a number of signings from English clubs during the off-season. RC Toulon have been on a decline. They've lost a lot of players during the off-period. It's a lot more French-based players. Could be an embed, you know, could be still waiting to bed people in. Haven't looked at the top 14 table, I'll be really honest. Bordeaux Begler, change of coaching staff, I think, recently. I'm pulling this from the depths, Chris. I don't know if you can tell. So I'm going to say Edinburgh to win, and in that one game, and I'm also going to say Scarlets. So I think it's going to be quite a GB centric kind of thing.
I think with Edinburgh, you know, they've done really well this year, and I know they'd be disappointed to lose in a semi final, but Richard Cockerell's got a good formula there, drawing the lockdown. You know, I was lucky enough for the Loose Heads TRU podcast to speak to Hamish Watson, and he was, you know, saying this is the best Edinburgh team he's played in since he joined the club. And I think you're right, Joe. I mean, I think Bordeaux played Wasps in the group stages of this, which now seems absolutely ages ago.
Nearly a year.
I've got a feeling that they won. I don't think Wasps won either game. I might be wrong with that. So
they won the away game.
Did they? I remember Willis playing really well, actually. Now you said that. But yeah, I think Edinburgh season, and knowing a bit about how they've done, I think similar to Ulster, really, they might use disappointment in a positive way.
Yeah, definitely. And they've had 2 weeks to shew on it all, so there might be some angry men out there. Leicester Tigers versus Castres Olympique. Leicester coming in pretty happy, actually, after last weekend's result, last Sunday's game. Cast is a team that I know has had a few additions. A Canadian international has joined them. I'll tell you that for free. Not that I charge much. And then, obviously, Leicester, I believe they've got... Who do you say they were putting it for press? I mean, we're not
they had a couple yesterday, but I can't, unfortunately, do the press conference now on tomorrow. But they've got... both Ben Youngs, Tom Youngs and Steve Borthwick, I think, for tomorrow. So I can imagine, you know, they'll go pretty strong for this game. It's unlikely they'll win or get far any further than this in the competition. I'm hopefully proven wrong, because it's always great to see an English club get far in Europe. And there is this, I know it was mentioned after the Gloucester game, there is this very small possibility that whoever finishes eighth may not get eighth if Leicester win the Challenge Cup. But it's a massive task for him. I know Nadolo, after the game, spoke to BT Sport. He said, yeah, we're at Welford Road. That should give us confidence, because we've won here against Northampton. So, as you say, Joe, they'll be pretty happy after the win against Northampton. And it's another 3-8 for them, this. But they want to put up a really strong display. And we know what Cass could do. They've got a decent European record, haven't they? So, Leicester, it'd be an interesting one. But I think it's probably going to be a French win rather than seeing the Tigers progress, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's all the games that are happening this weekend. What we should say is this is going to be like a return to normality after midweek games where we've been waking up on Mondays within an hour or two of waking up, we've been on press conferences. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, it's, you know, European rugby is the pinnacle of, you know, especially the Champions Cup, that is the pinnacle of the club game. You know, only when you look at the margins and the numbers of it, only certain amounts of people are actually able to go on to play internationals, which is the very, very top. So it's an exciting weekend. I think we're going to have some sort of preview.
Yeah, very possibly, mate. But we will obviously have your stuff with Pat going on the website Thursday, yep. Friday, same with Exeter ahead of this week. And then, we also must mention just quickly, which I'll speak to you after, Joe, as we're professionals. Yep. Prem Cup, obviously, Monday night as well. Prem Cup final, Sale versus Quins, was supposed to be the final game before as we went into lockdown and wasn't. Big chance for both sides to get a bit of silverware. Quins especially, would be nice to finish an inconsistent season with a bit of silverware. Paul Gustard said it's important for the club to get silverware on Monday night, so that'd be decent Monday viewing. But yeah, we do have one Premiership game after that, but then it's a pretty quietish week after that in terms of games being played. But yeah, we've got Champions Cup, Challenge Cup coming on TRU this weekend. Prem Cup, very possibly. And we've had some decent seven stuff as well over the course of this week. So we are still covering all bases. And me and Joe and Max have working very hard behind the scenes. And all the other contributors like Gary, etc., are doing their part as well. So keeping things ticking over as everything seems to ramp up.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, thank you to everyone who's on the website because I think... I'd be all right saying this. We've had record numbers.
I think we've been, Max's and the guys have been pretty impressed with in the engagement rates. Normally summer is a bit of a dip because of the season and, you know, the Olympics only been 4 years and it's really just the seven stuff that is happening. But yeah, we've been able to keep it going and hitting numbers, which we're very satisfied with considering, you know, who we are, the number of people we have in our team and, you know, the access we've had to stories which haven't been there, really. So, it's been positive, but we're back in the thick of things and looking forward to a European weekend this weekend, Joe.
Yeah. So, I suppose that's all that's really left to say is thank you very much for watching or listening to this podcast, whether you're on the YouTubes or you're on the podcasts. Myself and Chris will be back at some point in the near future, probably talking about international rugby.
Yeah, I reckon maybe when the season's done, a bit of playoffs, a bit of international chat, a few ideas we've got in the pipeline that we can probably discuss as well.
But I
imagine we'll be doing a bit of a playoff preview, looking ahead to the Autumn Nations, England squad announcement, that kind of thing, and doing another bumper pod, I think.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time since we did the podcast, not exactly the design, just been, I think, taken aback with how busy we became during the period. I think that's probably the best way of putting it, the easiest way of putting it. To read the content that we've been talking about throughout this, that we've been nattering on about when we're talking, that we've been talking to so-and-so and so-and-so, visit www.talkingrugbyunion.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at Talk Rugby Union. You can follow us on Instagram at Talking Rugby Union. Facebook, just literally type in Talking Rugby Union. LinkedIn, same thing. Should be the top one. About to hit 1,000 followers on LinkedIn, I think.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah, it's been a fun little task. Yeah, I've been Joe Harvey. As ever, I've been joined by Chris Heal. Chris, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Joe. Cheers, mate.
That'll be the end of the podcast, and I'm sure you'll see or hear us next time.